everybody. It's the Hoax Busters Live Saturday night. And hopefully we'll have a good show for tonight. Hopefully we'll get some people calling in and giving their thoughts on things. And of course, we have a protocol that we do with our show. We try to start off with the book that we've been covering the last, you know, few weeks. And that is the 6 Million Factor Fiction by Peter Winter. And Diane's been covering, you know, maybe, you know, a couple paragraphs or so every week. And we're hopefully going to get through it maybe this year. Who knows? What do you think, Miss Diane?
Well, I can't remember what, there's 31 actual chapters. So how does that
Well, the thing is, we'll do the best we can with it.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, we covered with Joe covering E. Michael Jones's book. He went through every chapter except the last one.
Yeah, and apparently it was good that was not covered, as it turns out.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, but anyway, there's the books, Money Tree Publishing, and we'll be talking about them at the break. But that's the book that Diane's covering, and I have them behind me right there. And you go there, and if you order books from that site, by the way, just to let you know, if you put in Hoax, I guess it is promo code Hoax, you get 10% off. And I think these books at that site are good. But we'll talk about those books later, and we'll go from there. I just want to let everybody know also that the Ryan Massano show comes after our show tonight at 10 o'clock. And he came on last week, and he had some problems with some audio problems and stuff. But this is the first time he's ever done a live show. So that's to be expected. I mean,
but the content was worth it.
Yeah. I mean, these things happen. But it was good. He did a good job. And I think he's going to be a good addition. I hope to listen to him after our show. And, you know, we'll see what he has to say. He's a very smart guy, and he's got a lot of balls, boy. He goes before those meetings, and he tells those people, you know, someone will interrupt them, and he'll say, "You shut up, I'm speaking," you know, and they'll just, you know. I think it's great. See, you have to do this to people. You can't let them push you around, and he doesn't want to push them around. So anyway, that was good. So we'll see what he talks about tonight. So anyway, okay, Miss Diane, if you want to continue on with the chapter, I guess we're dealing still with Auschwitz.
Yeah, this is the last part of the chapter, which what's interesting is at this point. At this juncture, Peter Winter says, a concise summary of the Auschwitz gas chamber theory is appropriate. So we're going to just kind of summarize what we've already discussed. The very first gas chamber at the main Auschwitz I camp, which for decades was favored as the epicenter of the killing operations, and Joe had always maintained that the Auschwitz I was the focus, was the key, has been conclusively proven to have been constructed post-war. There's no further debate on this matter, as the current camp administration openly acknowledges it. The temporary gas chambers located at Bunker 1 and Bunker 2, I'm assuming these are the White House and the Red House, have ceased to exist in any form, rendering the claims unverifiable. The next point. The alleged underground gas chambers of Auschwitz II, Birkenau, were intended and erected solely as mortuaries. All architectural plans, the physical construction, and the functional preparations for these edifices indicate they were never purposed as killing centers. Moreover, three distinct forensic investigations of these structures have decisively shown that they were not employed as gas chambers. Next point, the sole gas chamber at Auschwitz had utilized Zyklon B was a garment delousing station in buildings 164 of the Canada 1 complex. All right. It can thus be definitely concluded that the accusations of mass gassing with cyanide pellets at Auschwitz are unfounded. The remaining evidence is limited to eyewitness testimonies and confessions. And Jim and Joe, we have just had a lot of discussion about the unreliability of eyewitness testimonies and various tests that have been done attempting to prove that. No tangible proof exists of mass gassings at Auschwitz. Okay, the gassing of the Hungarian Jews. Now, this is interesting. One of the frequently cited mass gassings reportedly conducted at Auschwitz was the alleged extermination of over 400,000 Jews deported from Hungary between May 15 and July 9, 1944. Proponents assert that these Jews were all gassed and cremated immediately upon their arrival. This assertion is demonstrably incorrect for several reasons, including the previous mentioned impracticality of the underground gas chambers to process such a vast number. Furthermore, the combined cremation facilities at Auschwitz in June 44 could not have managed 400,000 bodies in an eight-week span. The theoretical maximum capability of the Birkenau crematories was, and this is, I think, a bit high, 1,248 corpses per day. Thus, over the entire 55-day interval during which Hungarian Jews were transported to the camp, the maximum theoretical cremation capacity would have been approximately 68,640 bodies. Even this number is an overestimation, considering the frequent breakdowns and necessary repairs of the ovens. So, the question that then arises is, what's always the question you get, Jim? What is the question you always get when you're discussing the Hungarian Jews? If they weren't gassed,
where'd they go?
Yeah, that's right. Where'd they go? That's exactly right. They were actually, and I maintain, and there's a great deal of evidence to prove that at the time, the Soviets were sorely lacking in labor, and every country they entered in became an automatic pool of labor of individuals to go back to the gulags in the Soviet Union. Okay, this individual, Peter Winter, describes this scenario. The response to this question was furnished as early as 1964 when Polish historian Danuta Czech disclosed in the inaugural edition of her book, Auschwitz Chronicle, that there existed a so-called transit camp within Auschwitz II, Birkenau. This transit camp functioned as an interim holding area for inmates who were subsequently dispatched to work in munitions factories and labor encampments throughout the Reich. She stated that in mid-May, when the mass transports of Hungarian Jews start arriving in Auschwitz, the young, healthy, and strong Jews of both genders are dispersed for a time as so-called depot prisoners to various barracks at Birkenau, but are not recorded in the camp registers, purposely are not recorded. They're taken care of and accommodated and so on. The Jews temporarily located in Birkenau receive no ID numbers and are not tattooed. Selections are conducted at specific intervals. When the camp administration has a need for laborers, it sends some prisoners from these camps to specific auxiliary camps or to the labor squads. Then they are registered and given numbers under the direction of the WVHA. Others are transferred to armaments plants in the interior of the Reich. And there, under the date of August 22nd, she reports that there were 30,000 unregistered Hungarian Jews in Birkenau transit camp. These references and the fact that there was a transit camp section at Auschwitz indicate that most of the Hungarian Jews were simply shipped off to other labor camps to provide the desperately needed laborers for the Reich's war effort. In fact, German government documents from this time clearly reveal the reasons for the mass deportation of Hungarian Jews to the Reich. Germany urgently needed labor for armaments and other war-related enterprises. And all focus and function on, particularly in 1944, which was right before the Soviets came in, they had already laid siege to Budapest in Hungary. That it would be occurring really mass in the fall. So they knew that the Russians were coming. So 44 was critical to maximize labor, and therefore there was a concern about any typhus epidemics. And as we have mentioned before, Heinrich Himmler was very concerned about too many people dying because this really jettisoned the labor effort. So, Himmler reported in a letter to the chief of the SS Hauptamt, which is head office, as well as the other agencies, 10,000 soldiers were to be assigned to guard the workers engaged in the Jager, or the pursuit aircraft construction program, because otherwise of placing the guarding and the efficient employment of approximately 200,000 Jews were impossible. So all forces came to bear on attempting to reproduce and produce war effort machinery. The Führer has ordered that for the guarding of the 200,000 Jews, the Reichsführer SS Himmler will dispatch 10,000 Waffen-SS soldiers. So the guarding of them became critical. On August 15th, the concentration camp department of the SS Main Economic and Administration Office reported that there were about 500,000 inmates and that an additional 612,000 prisoners were in the process of being added to the camp system. Of this latter group, 90,000 were Jews who were being brought in as part of the Hungarian program or the Jewish action. So between the 90,000 Hungarian Jews and the 200,000 mentioned in Himmler telegram, nearly 300,000 of the Hungarian Jews are already accounted for as being dispersed away from Auschwitz within weeks of their arrival there to various parts of the Reich. In summary, not only was it physically impossible for Auschwitz to murder 300,000 Hungarian Jews in 8 weeks, but there exists ample documentation that the vast majority were then deported onward to the approximately 1,200 labor camps and subcamps that existed throughout the Reich territories. Whew, that was quite a different aspect regarding the Hungarian Jews for me. Auschwitz's real purpose was a labor camp, so the lack of gas chambers raised the next pertinent question. What was it there for? And the answer is clear. It was a vast industrial area, housed factories from major industries that supported the Reich's war effort. And the employment of inmates at Auschwitz as laborers also clarifies why the Nazis would have deemed it necessary to tattoo identification numbers on prisoners' left forearm. Okay. Anything else and any difference is going to be fake. We talked about that in one of the Hoaxbusters. Okay. If the Nazis had intended to gas all Jews sent to Auschwitz, it would not have made sense to incur the trouble and expense of identifying and tattooing them beforehand. Not to mention that the numbers that were reported, there weren't enough to justify the 6 million. Most of them were just 5 digits. Some were 6 digits, but most were 5 on the forearm. And this was a way, to track the laborers. Okay, as the Soviet army advanced westward, the Nazis closed the Auschwitz camp and required all able-bodied inmates to evacuate westward with them. This action contradicts the mass murder of theory. If they truly intended to kill all the inmates of Auschwitz, they would have had no logical reason to bring the Jews with them back into the Reich, of which Anne Frank and her sister were one of them. They went to Bergen-Belsen, right, Jim?
Yeah.
Okay, which is where they died of typhus. Okay.
Well, whatever sickness they got, whatever.
Yeah, I think it was alleged to be typhus, because everybody was dying of typhus, it seemed, at that time. Frank Grischk report, and I've never heard of this. Some Holocaust storytellers cite this report, Frank Grischk report, as proof of the gas chambers at Auschwitz. He was an SS Sturmbannführer major affiliated with the SS personnel main office. In May 1943, he was directed to accompany his direct superior, Maximilian von Herff, on a tour of the concentration camps in Poland. Okay. He maintained a comprehensive diary of this trip, which took place from May 4 to 1643. This diary is the official Frank Grisch document. It recounts visits to Auschwitz, Lublin, Warsaw, and 3 labor camps. Notably, there is no mention in this report of gas chambers or any type of extermination. In fact, the description of Auschwitz emphasizes the challenges faced by the camp authorities in combating lice. The original document by itself is unremarkable and contains no indication of mass murder programs. Oftentimes we say it's not what's in the report or document, it's what's not in it. It's like the memoirs of the 3 individuals after the war who were writing their their stories, Churchill, De Gaulle, and Eisenhower, I guess. None of them talked about gas chambers, or which they could have, I suppose, but it was already debunked by then. And then there was an alleged secret addendum regarding this. Oh, well, yeah, but you've got to read in between the lines. You've got to read the other documents that were kept out of it. And it turned out that these documents were retyped by the Third Army. That would be Patton's army. And others were retyping these documents. So they're totally unreliable. And in the secret addendum, it reveals its fabrication. Now, interestingly, and Jim and others have spoken about Pressac. Pressac was a, Jean-Claude Pressac was a Holocaust, he was, I don't think he was a survivor. He was a so-called expert historian.
Well, in he wrote a book. I mean, he wrote a book.
Auschwitz Technique and Operation of the Gas Chambers went on to point out other errors in the secret addendum. This was the addendum I just spoke of, where there had been a lot of retypings by various armies after the war. It describes three big pillars in the alleged death chamber, whereas Pressack points out that there were actually four pillars in the room, which was, of course, a mortuary or lichen killer. It claims that there were 10 large crematory furnaces in this building. In reality, there were five, three muffled crematory ovens and crematory two. It asserts that the crematory would burn 10,000 corpses every day. Even Pressack concedes that this exaggerated figure is a physical impossibility. And it purports that 300 to 400 people were gassed at once in the underground gas chamber, which was the mortuary. This contradicts other Holocaust storyteller allegations, which suggest the gas chamber exterminated 2,000 victims simultaneously. Their numbers don't jive. The locations don't jive. And so it becomes all bovine fecal matter, you might say. It postulates, let me see, this same visit, this same Frank Critch document postulates that after the gassing concludes, a few minutes later, the door on the other side is open, leading to a lift. In Pressack's words, this is the most striking and serious error, as both the blueprints and the extant ruins observable today illustrate only one entrance and exit to the underground mortuary. Again, these are debunking the alleged narrative. And again, Jim would have to teach the Holocaust hoaxsters what they believe, and then he'd have to debunk what they believe. Photographs of Auschwitz inmates allegedly talk about the various photographs in relation to their findings, and there's no way or very little chance that inmates are going to be able to get photographs in. But photographs that are actually presented here are well-fed individuals and then staging. And Jim has a video up on the BitChute channel about Soviet staging. And even Anne Frank, I think it was her stepsister, who was declaring that it's a hoax. And it might be interesting to know the Frankfurt Auschwitz trial of 63 to 65. Can you imagine 1963 to 65? No one was charged with gassing Jews. Richard Baer, the second Auschwitz camp commandant, dismisses existence of gas chambers. He succeeded Hess as the commandant of Auschwitz, was arrested in preparation for the 63 trial. Though he was in perfect health, he died suddenly in prison before the trial began, what one German newspaper described as a highly mysterious way. You think? As well, one of those suicide notes with the three gunshots to the head. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's one of my favorites. The Auschwitz swimming pool, that there was a library, a theater just outside the main camp fence, a hospital for prisoner use, all debunking the prospect or the alleged extermination purpose for Auschwitz. It was the conclusion, no mass murder facilities. So finally, the primary purpose of the camp is also evident. It was constructed as a labor camp. This is a summation. To provide a workforce for the essential industrial operations that the Third Reich required for its war effort. That many of individuals, both Jewish and non-Jewish, died at the camp from illnesses, judicial executions, we don't deny that, or natural causes is not debated, and was an unfortunate consequence of the brutal war and the conditions it engendered. But it's very different from the deliberate policy of extermination, which is being alleged by the Holocaust hoaxers or storytellers. Considering the physical improbability of the mass murder allegations, the focus now shifts to the confessions and eyewitness accounts that form the basis of the extermination claims. This is devoid of facts. This examination will be covered in another section of this study. The next one is Rudolf Hess, Confession and Memoirs. So that ends chapter 8.
Okay, so yeah, there's so many things there that I could talk about.
But, that's fine. Yeah, absolutely.
Complete nonsense. These people, I get a kick out of it because as I looked into this all the years I've been looking into it, I'm finally understanding that the reason why a lot of the Jews never really wanted to talk about it is because they knew they were in a work camp. So, and they some of them would transfer it to two or three or four. I've even heard 12 other camps.
That's right.
Why would that be? Why would they be transferring some of the 12 camps if they were just going to kill them when they got off the train, as they claimed, the Hungarian Jews?
That doesn't sound like good use of resources.
Yeah. So I think what happened is they were ashamed that they worked for the German Reich, and they didn't want to talk about it because then they'd have to talk about this story about them working wherever they worked. So now they come up with a cockamamie story about them being gas chambers, and that took the heat off of them. So now they could just, oh, good, I don't have to talk about where I really was.
Not only that, but then they get paid, too, because Spielberg was not at that time. But later on, as they began to realize how lucrative it was to attempt to describe the most atrocious, outrageous stories, you get more money for it.
Yeah. Now, the only other thing I have a problem here is with the tattooing, because I'm starting to have a different viewpoint of this tattooing situation.
Yeah.
And if you look at all the people's tattoos that supposedly were in the camp, none of them are the same. None of them. I mean, how do you have a tattoo machine that's it's not the same tattoo? It's not the same font.
Or
everything's wrong. Where they put them was wrong. Everything's wrong. So I even have a problem with, did they even get tattoos? I'm coming to the conclusion there's something wrong with that picture too. Now, we know there's a movie out right now. It's called The Tattooist in Auschwitz. And Harvey Keitel, he's in it, I guess. And it's all about the tattooist in Auschwitz. The guy was doing the tattoos. I mean, really, if you really think the Germans were going to put somebody in charge of tattooing people, not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You're not going to put someone in charge of something so specialized like that, the tattoo people. So anyway, okay, what's going on here? Speak free.
I know, apparently, so we're still, I don't know how we're, speak free. I mean,
Okay, well, anyway.
Not speak free, but
I mean, the show is being recorded anyway. It's going to go up the next day anyway.
On StreamYard. So, it's on StreamYard.
Whatever.
Yeah.
All right, so anyway, this whole situation with the Jews and the camps is just, again, the people know what happened. They just don't want to talk about it and admit it. And they have a lie to cover up what happened. So why not go with the lie? Then we don't have to explain it.
As lucrative as it was becoming.
Well, then they found out that they could be making money on this.
Big bucks, yeah.
You know, at first they were embarrassed to talk about their experiences in the camp. They didn't want anybody to know they were actually working for the Germans. And then once they found out that they brought in this Holocaust hoax gas chamber bullshit, oh, good, great. Now we don't have to worry about it. It's something, you know. Okay, so I guess we're all we're caught up with that. We'll talk about more of that next week. And right now, if we want to bring anybody in to talk about some other things.
I heard a couple of beeping and boppings.
All right, so if you want, oh, Henry's
all right,
with us.
Okay. Henry.
Okay, Henry, good to see you.
Hey, Henry.
How's it going?
Hello, it's going well. How are you guys?
Oh, good. So you were out today, right? Doing your thing, right?
Yeah, we were. Today was a red letter day.
How's that?
We showed up and we're setting up, and these two young women that came over and said, "We're here to join you guys."
Oh, jeez.
And they were pro-Palestinian young women started – well, I gave them the Palestine flag, and they started waving it. She waved it for the entire hour and 15 minutes.
Wow.
We were there. At the end of the time, I just said, why don't you keep the flag? Because you're going to use it more than I'm going to use it. So we gave her a present of the flag, but it was really enjoyable. Chris, my buddy, said that last week these two drove by and yelled out, "We love you guys."
Aww.
And he said, "Why don't you come join us next week?" And they did. Hmm. So I'm pretty enthused by that. I said to them, you know, they had their own signs and it was mostly focused on Palestine from the river to the sea. And you know, I'm aware and you guys are aware that we're broaching the Holocaustianity religion. on our protest, and I went over to tell them that you're only responsible for the signs that you carry. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody questions you about our signs, you tell them to come talk to us.
Absolutely.
And they said, no, we agree with all your signs. And so I said, well, okay. She said, thanks for caring. And I said, well, you know, caring is what got us all into this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, how can you not care for Palestinians? And then, so a couple of events just happened in the last half hour. I'm on a little Facebook group. It's not Facebook, but it's something else for our high school reunion class. And I think I told you guys before, I went to a school that was high school that was over 50% Jewish. Mm-hmm. And one guy just put on the website, and we're not supposed to talk about politics because I got into it with some other classmate last time and they just dumped politics. But anyhow, he comes up and he says, with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, we pray for our soldiers, and we pray for the soldiers of our best ally. And so it caused me to look around. And apparently Iran has launched some drone attacks against Israel.
Really?
They haven't. I don't think they've landed or anything. But they're on the way. And if you just go to Google News and type in Iran, you'll find all.
We have a problem with that, Henry, and that this information, they're not getting, I'm presenting this as a scenario. They're not, Israel is not getting enough sympathy because it's kind of backfiring on them. But Iran has always been the boogeyman. So if they can give some indication that there's an aggressive action, which I don't think Iran would do that. Now, it might be a kind of a surveillance type of thing, but that's really aggressive. I don't think Iran would do it. But we don't know because we're not there, and we're not going to get the truth about it.
Well, you're absolutely right. All I can tell you is that we were watching the Masters on television, and they broke in with a CBS announcement.
And CBS, so huh? Yeah, that's a reliable
source. Come on, Diane, don't you believe CBS and all the other Jewish-owned newscasts in this country?
That's good. You haven't lost your sense of humor. That's very good.
You know, but something's going on, I think. And, I think they're ginning up noise to get the U.S. to launch an attack on Iran.
I know they are, because they've been wanting to do that. The problem is Iran is allied with Russia and I think also with China. And so that would be total suicide on our part. It's not a good plan.
I tell you, we have such little leadership that it's just it's really bothersome to me. So I bring my world back down to what I can do and what I can't do.
There you go.
And when I find out that two young women have joined us, you know, even just one time, I don't care if they come back next week or not. I was a little thrilled about that.
Yeah, I would be. Yeah.
I have made one tiny inroad to BitChute. I think I loaded up one video, BitChute, Jim, and and actually, I was going to put the when I spoke out there at Mark Weber's people IHR organization, he spoke before I did for about 20 minutes, and it was an excellent speech about, the chosen people and how other religions are proselytizing. They want people to come in, but the Jews want people to stay out. Mm-hmm. Only they can run their own business. And so it's going to be, I thought it was a very interesting talk, and I'm trying to get that up there. And once I am successful technically in getting it on, I'm going to ask him for permission to make it public, and you guys can listen to it. And for my talk, I tried to get that up there, Jim, but apparently it was too long, too big, and it couldn't handle it.
I know what you mean.
Well, how long was your talk?
An hour.
Well, that shouldn't be a problem.
It just needs to be reduced.
Yeah, I can do it in sections. You know, I can cut it off.
You don't even have to do that. I know that, Jim. If you had a way to be able to get it to Jim,
I can understand it being because they only take. I think you can't go over 2 gigabytes.
But so, you know how to reduce it.
Yeah. So what I have to do, like this show here, it's a 2-hour show. And so it's way big. I couldn't put this show up in BitChute. So right, what I got to do is I got to take it, run it through my editor. I got to cut it down on I got to put it 640 by 480. And then it becomes under two gigabytes. That's what you have to do too, do that. That's what would have to happen.
Yeah. Well, when I wake up one morning and I'm as smart as you are, I'll be able to do that.
But, you're smart.
Until then, I'm just going to have to just.
Oh, that. I know what you mean.
Well, no, yeah. there's programs that do it, but you're right. It's not easy. You know, these video editing programs, you know, I mean, I have a whole editing program that I put videos up with, and I just use that to do it. But you don't have that program. So, but there are programs out there that if you looked at how to reduce, a video to a smaller video, you could get the program to do it in three. I mean, you just have to learn how to use it. It's not that complicated, but you can do
it.
Oh,
yeah, not that complicated, right.
Well, I've been using Wondershare. And
Wondershare, I get that myself. I have that.
It seems to be pretty good. I'll play with it just if I can learn to cut that down the pixel size or whatever they call it.
Yeah, what you're gonna do? You get however it comes in. You're gonna see how big it is. If it's over 2 gigabytes, it's too big. So then you gotta just cut it down to be smaller.
Should be something on your Wondershare that allows you to maybe not have it as a high quality, have a lower quality.
You bring it down to the next quality. Like 640, 480.
Yeah,
You don't want it under that, Diane. You want 640 by 480. If you get too low, the quality's crap. 640, 480 is good enough. So anyway.
Right.
Okay. So, all right, Henry, you're good. Anything else you want to tell us?
I wanted a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm going to address my city council on Monday.
Okay.
And because I only have these two dual-sided sheets of what we're teaching our children in Ann Arbor about the Holocaust.
Okay.
And it says here, setting the stage as part of the vision for Europe, the Nazis. And I had a little comment for you, Diane, based on that.
Yes,
because
sir.
I thought that in Peter Winter's book here, the one that you read in, there are pictures from Der Angriff, the German newspaper.
Right.
Where is it? On page 7, and it talks about the Ein Nazi fahrt nach Palestine. And so I challenge in a friendly way, of course, the comment about they never called themselves Nazis, because here it is, unless you have prior information or contesting information to that. But it is. It seems like it's right in.
Okay. A Nazi travels to Palestine. It does not sound like a German paper. I know it's in German, but it doesn't sound. It doesn't even sound like their style. But
well, can you turn to page 7 there in the book?
I'm looking right at it.
And it says Der Angriff.
I know Der Angriff. But see, the style of a newspaper, they would not say a Nazi travels to Palestine. That's not the German way of saying it. So I don't know. That's the only thing I know. as far as that's concerned, I know that Peter Winter uses the term Nazi. I believe he does it as a short form rather than he could put National Socialist and put in parentheses NS, but he chooses to use the denigrating term. And so I'm not even sure. I don't know, maybe this is an appeal to, it's not well done. It's an appeal to an international audience. And if this SS officer, Mildenstein, I'm seriously wondering about his background. It really doesn't sound like German writing from a German person. That's all I'm saying. I can't confirm it or deny it in this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm just saying that it's, you know, he put it in his book, and there's a picture of the coin that I'm familiar with that coin. And when I asked, it was a Jewish generated coin, which of course would use the word Nazi, but here it is in Der Angriff. Anyhow, I'm just raising that as a point to be considered by you.
Okay. I just have questions about that. It doesn't seem to match the German style of writing. So that's all I'm saying. I just have questions.
And so,
I do have a question.
This Holocaust narrative is being taught to the students of Ann Arbor. Talks about, as part of their vision for Europe, the Nazis proposed a new racial order. They claimed that the German people were a, quote, master race.
That's not true.
Of course, I know that the term master race was never used by them, and I spoke to counsel about that. Mm-hmm. But they're basing the whole gained support for his racist ideas. Hitler knowingly tapped into a hatred for Jews that had deep roots in European history. I think that race did play a role in terms of defining what the German folk were, and that's what Hitler wanted, was to protect his people in other countries like Austria, Czechoslovakia, Poland, etc. And so that part makes sense to me, that race did play a part, but that race had nothing to do with why Hitler hated the Jews. They were hated, and I think Peter puts it out in the very early pages, or maybe I'm confusing his book with someone else. But I'm going to speak about how that is just not a concept we should be teaching the children, because it's not correct.
It's not the whole picture. It's not in context.
It's not that, and it's also ignores the Bolsheviks. It ignores the getting the U.S. into World War I on England's side. It ignores the degradation of the culture of Germany. Weimar Germany was really destructive towards the German sense of self. And there were many other factors at play. And, of course, this time I think I'm going to take my camera so I can show you guys later how the city council people get up out of their chairs and just start talking to each other when I'm speaking.
Oh, I know. It's utterly rude. This Jewy wise person wants to ask you a question. That's why he was attempting to insert something. I didn't know what he was doing, but
hold on for a second. Look,
sure.
I'm having the same problem I had last time.
I understand.
When he came in, okay?
Yeah.
I'm trying to do a show here, taking each person one at a time, okay? Mr. Jewy Wise here, his meme is making a noise. I don't want it disrupting our flow. That's why I muted him. I didn't mute him because I don't want him to speak. I'm going to give him a chance to speak if he just becomes patient, okay? Yeah. But his meme was making crazy noises. I don't know what the hell's going on, but so I don't want those to interfere with Henry talking, okay? So anyway, just be patient, Mr. Jew Wise. I'm going to bring you in. You're going to talk next, okay? No problem.
He wants to ask Henry a question.
Okay, bring him in.
On his time, right?
Fine. Yeah. Bring him in.
Okay.
It's okay with me. Let me hold on.
Unmute.
There's no background sound.
Okay.
Oh, what's going on here?
I don't know. He muted himself.
I don't know. All right, go ahead. You're in.
Okay, there's no echo in the background, correct?
Right.
I think we're good. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, thank goodness. So, Henry, you are Jewish, correct?
Negative.
Oh. Okay, I was just going to say that if you were, I knew a guy on Gab who was a Jew. He called himself the pro-white kike. I don't know why, but he said that he was for white people and he wanted to make his people go extinct because they're for all the problems in the world that they've caused to us. Now, I don't know if he was trolling or what, but I just kind of took his word for it because I don't know.
Well, I mean, to be frank with you, though I think you should be frank with us and tell us who you are, but I was born from two Jewish parents.
Right.
But, you know, but in terms of, you know, my understanding of what Judaism is, it's a big club that you're just born into. Mm-hmm. And that Diane and Jim were not born into the club, so they're not Jews. Well, I don't want to be a part of a group like that. I don't want to be chosen.
You've rejected it.
I just want to be regular. And so,
there's a difference between being a Jew and being Jewish. You see, being Jewish to them is a religion. But, you know, you can be a Jew and still be a Christian and not promote your racial hatred for white people, if you understand what I'm saying.
You reject that too.
Yeah, I consider myself a white man, and I'm not ashamed of it. If that helps you.
And unfortunately, we're born of what we were, and you cannot change that. You cannot change to be a woman or what. You're born as what God has assigned you.
That's right. That's right. But you can reject Judaism, because apparently Judaism was supposed to have morphed into a belief in Christ. And many people rejected Christ and opted for Judaism. Well, Henry rejects Judaism.
This
picture that I have, it's I made it in reference to underneath the tunnels back in New York City when the Jews had these things going on with the bedsheets. So I relate it to that with this character from a horror movie that was also in the tunnels. So I did that to interpret that and make fun of Stephen King, who is a very liberal Jew, and he even admitted that he did not like white people.
Huh. That's news to me. I know Pennywise is what you're taking the name from, right?
Yes, sir.
The clown, the terror clown or something like that. It was a much better book than it was a movie, I'll tell you that. But I never heard that Stephen King was a Jew.
I had neither.
Yes, sir, he was.
Okay. And what's the source for that?
Source for what, sir?
The claim that Stephen King is a Jew.
I think it's on Jewpedia. I call it Jewpedia because it is what it is. But I think there is an article somewhere that he was born to Jewish parents, something like that. They were Hungarian or something like that.
Well, I call it Hebepedia. I think you're talking about the same thing.
Yeah, the Wikipedia one, yeah.
And we can – let me see if I can look up Stephen King quickly here.
If he is a Jew, who cares?
Well, he's got his success because he has contacts.
I mean, well, what does that have to do with anything? What's your point?
His motivation is success. I think.
Exactly.
Well, nobody succeeds in Hollywood without having some connection with the Jews in charge.
Well, most of the people that are Jews. There's no doubt about it.
All right, it's a homosexual banking mafia. That's all that is.
Yeah.
The I guess Stephen King's father was Donald Edwin King, who was born in Indiana with a surname Pollock, changing it to King as an adult. So maybe that's where you're getting your information from. I don't know. It doesn't seem to play big as far as I know.
It says he was raised a Methodist. It says in that article.
Okay.
He was raised a Methodist. I don't know.
But he still had ties in Hollywood, sufficient enough ties with Jewishness to be successful in Hollywood.
Yeah. The if I'm still on just for my last gasp here, I wanted to tip of the hat to Tucker Carlson, who interviewed a Christian. I don't want to say I know what this guy's title was, but he was in the West Bank, and he was talking to Tucker, and Tucker was questioning why aren't Christian leaders in this country defending the Christians that are being bombed and that's the churches point. That are being bombed in Palestine, in Gaza. And so he didn't jump on the third rail, but he tippy-toed on it. And so I give him some kudos for that.
Keep it going. He's got a kind of momentum, right?
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah, me too.
But in any case, who wrote Treason to Jewishness is Loyalty to Humanity? That's a...
somebody in the comment section.
Because there was a book by a Jew. It was called Treason to Whiteness is Loyalty to Humanity.
Yeah, it was me, Uncle Henry. Sorry to butt in. I just wanted to let you know. That's where I got it from. He was a Harvard professor. You're talking about Noel Ignatieff. He's the one. He said Treason to Whiteness is Loyalty to Humanity.
Exactly.
Noel Ignatieff. He was a real piece of shit. But.
And he would never, write that Treason to Jewishness is Loyalty to Humanity. And I think that that's, I think that I just coined a term a couple months ago, I guess, and I put it on Facebook today, and I got a thumbs up from Gilad Atzman, which means I'm on the right track.
I guess so.
And I just said that, when people are dealing with relationships and things aren't going well and stuff like that, and, you really got to deal with the issues. And so the saying was, the only way out is through. Mm-hmm. And I'm taking that line and I'm saying that for Jews in the Palestine peace movement, the only way out is out. And I think on an individual basis, people have to come to an understanding that the Judaism that has practiced in my family throughout my first 55 years was, totally isolating, totally us versus them, totally let's make war. So it's a, I think people are going to have to make some tough decisions and hopefully, and even Gilad said it's a work in progress. So, so Jerry Wise, you may catch me saying something that's, supremacist based or something like that. And if you want to tell me my Jewish supremacism is showing, I'll listen to you. I remember saying that to a former friend.
You're talking to him.
I can't imagine, Henry, that you would slip even to that degree.
Well, you never know. Anything's possible. But you got me in a good mood this week because those two ladies showed up.
Oh, yeah, that's encouraging.
I'm pretty thrilled. I'll look for them next week. I'll get back to you guys after that and give you another report and an update.
We look forward to it, Henry. We're going to count on it.
All right. Very good. Guys, I'll take care. Bye, Jim.
Yep. Thanks, Henry. Yep.
Bye. Good night, Henry.
Good night.
Okay, CB, you're on the show here if you want to talk about some things.
Well, hello, Hoaxbusters. It's been a while since we've talked.
Yeah.
Were you on Ryan Masano's show last week or trying to?
Yeah. I wasn't trying to. I enjoyed listening to Ryan's his story.
Well, the call in part.
Yeah, we listened to it too. You know what was good about the show? You didn't swear once.
Well, I must not have been feeling good or something. So.
Yeah. Low moment.
People talk about me swearing, and anyway, you are fire. You are
that's,
on
that's
fire.
Just how people talk now. I try to watch my language where I can. Especially when but sometimes you just got to say fuck it. So tonight I thought I'd drop some bombs of my own in honor of what Iran's doing. So I've never mentioned this to you folks or anyone else, and I'm not saying this to wave a flag or anything like that. But I'm actually, believe it or not, half Iranian. My mother was actually born in Iran. She was born in a place called Tabriz in northwestern Iran. And she grew up in Tehran, came to the United States in about 1970, 71. She met my father, who was Scottish and Irish. Now, you wouldn't know it if you met me, knowing that I'm Iranian. I'm pale as a ghost, and I have bluish-green eyes, light brown hair. I mean, I look like I just got here from Dublin or Cork or someplace like that.
In fact, those are the only Iranians I've ever met were those that were fair and with blue eyes.
Well, they're very old-school Persians. actually are. Yeah, I've known some that were like some of my mother's medical school classmates. They were almost as white as I am. I mean, I couldn't believe how white some of them were. But so it's not something I'm not ashamed of my heritage. I'm proud of my heritage, but I'm also, I was not raised a Muslim. My mother was actually raised a Shia Muslim. She's at this point, I would say, an agnostic, but, I was always raised a cultural Christian. We celebrated Christmas. You know, we didn't go to church or anything like that. But, you know, my role models when I was growing up were Jesus Christ and the American Founding Fathers. The United States is the only home I've ever known. I love traditional America. I would love to see America to be like it was, let's say, in the 1950s. So I'm not on the Muslim side or anything like that. I've been accused of that many times in the past. I don't think that it's a good thing for Muslims to be coming into the United States or into Western countries. People should be in their own countries. The Americans and Westerners and Christians should be in the West. So nevertheless, but that's something I wanted to be upfront about. I don't try to hide who I am, but it is who I am. But I'm as American as apple pie. You know, it's my father was in the U.S. Army, stationed in Germany during the 60s. Actually, I have a half sister I've never met who is Finnish. Her mother was from Finland. So what I wanted to talk about tonight was just how the ties and what Iran's significance is in all of this, Muslim stuff aside. But I don't know if you folks are aware of this, but there's a gentleman who has a similar background to me. He's his name's Robert Stepper, and he's a archaeologist and an author. He has a pretty good YouTube channel. So he's his father was Iranian. His mother is like German and Italian. He puts together a lot of good videos about these kind of things that are happening. These are all prophesied, basically. So he talks about how the Germans, the Third Reich, and the Iranians at the time had a very close relationship. There was a lot of work going on with the Ananurba in northwestern Iran, actually where my mother's from, in Azerbaijan. And the SS was doing a lot of work in there, and they were looking for things like the Garden of Eden, which is supposedly in and around that area in northwestern Iran. That's supposedly where it was. And all these things that are happening, you know, the Iranians are basically like the modern descendants of the ancient Persians. That's right. And obviously for those who are familiar with the Bible, the story of Cyrus the Great, who was a Persian king, rescued the Jews from Babylon and gave them their freedom. And then now here, this is how the Jews today are repaying them. By treating, you know, the modern descendants of Cyrus like shit and trying to destroy them and destroy their country and whatnot. So these are all, you know, biblically prophesized things. I think that, basically what's going on. And my first concern is not Iran. My first concern has always been America. I want to see the United States be a prosperous and peaceful place where, you know, people are getting along. And, you know, it was, like I said, like in the 50s was a very good time, I think. But all these things that are happening, these are all the fulfillment of God's prophecy. And I think hopefully we're seeing the end of the Zionist project. And this is the beginning of the end. I think this is hopefully what Cliff High calls the Israeli mistake. So Cliff High, about a year ago, I think he put out a video talking about how the Israelis are planning on launching a air attack against Iran, especially against its nuclear sites, and the Iranians are going to shoot them down with these modern air defenses that the Russians have supplied them and sold them. And then basically that's going to cause Israel to completely collapse and descend into a civil war, and then that'll be the end. And then basically once the United States does not do anything to help Israel, the other countries like Iran and Turkey and the Arab countries, they'll move in and clobber them once and for all, and then this will be the beginning of the world to be free.
I think you have wishful thinking, my friend.
Well, one can wish and pray, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, they only get more ferocious, and they have quite a installment in each of the countries that they've extorted money from and threatened and continue to threaten. Then they get backed into a corner like this, they get even more dangerous. I would not at all be surprised if they themselves bombed Israel and said that Iran did it.
Right. Cornered rats, guys.
Just saying.
Well, that could be. You could be right, Diane. I'm trying to remain optimistic, but, you know, hopefully this is the beginning of the end. I don't know. You know, either way, I think big things are happening.
Oh, that's true.
the pants pooper is supposed to address the nation this evening, so we'll see what he has to say. But you know, this is I think this is the fulfillment of biblical prophecy, God willing.
Yeah, don't pack up just yet. I mean, don't crack open the champagne bottles just yet.
No champagne here. No champagne here.
That's a metaphor for celebrating a victory. Just be watchful. Just kind of watch and understand. You know, when Henry came up with this, CBS came up with this news report. Oh my God, Henry, this is a stage thing. Israel needs to. Things aren't going well in the sympathy department
for them. That's true.
They need to have somebody attack them. Even it's themselves. It's like the rabbi, and I have a meme for this, knocking over tombstones in a Jewish cemetery, and they get caught. And so the caption says, "What are you doing, Rabbi?
What you doing, Rabbi?"
So they have no qualms about firing on their own hospitals, schools, or whatever, and blaming someone else for it, and filming it as if someone else did it.
Well, of course.
Because it's always a twofer. Yep. Each and every time.
We will see. I mean, yeah. You know, this is – I think they've really gotten themselves into a fine fix at this point. I don't think that they calculated on things going as badly as they have for them.
I suspect not.
And I see a lot of fear amongst Jews. I mean, I've known a lot of Jews growing up, and that's one of my whenever I knew that some Jew was a hardcore Zionist, one of my favorite things to do to really, you know, shake their cage was to tell them that I'm half Iranian, and they would just their face would darken because they couldn't. They look at me and they just see this, you know, this a pale skinned Irish looking white guy, and it really made them shit their pants. So,
hoy to the day, what's going on?
It was probably the dynamite in the vest that was giving them troubles.
Well, see, that's the whole thing. Is there's people don't realize that there's a big this is a big thing that's playing out. So, you know, when I was a kid, I kind of saw this coming. I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm a prophet or anything like that, but I saw a lot of this coming, and I think everybody has a certain role to play. So there's, you know, the Russians have a certain role to play. Mm-hmm. White people in the West have a certain role to play. The Chinese have a certain role to play, or Asian people in general, and the Iranians have a certain role to play. So this whole thing, this is all, you know, God's plan hopefully is coming together. But, you know, obviously, you know, we want to you know, wake up as many Americans as we can, because a war between the United States and Iran, and I don't say this because I care about Iran so much, this is going to get a lot of innocent Americans killed, just like it did in Iraq.
The problem is Iran is not going to be bullied like Iraq and Syria and Lebanon and others. They've got allies. They've got, like you said, weaponry, and they know how to defend themselves. Our country is a bully. And they only go after those countries that can't defend themselves.
That's true, yeah.
Well, been made a bully anyway. It's not like it's any of our direct intention.
Well, I'm not talking about the people. I'm talking about our government and the Pentagon and our foreign and military policies that are run and ramrod into our lives that we did not want. We don't want war. We don't want our kids dying over there.
None
I had something I brought up that I can maybe bring up later, information that is very disturbing to me in regard to our soldiers and our kids.
Oh,
but
boy.
That was awesome.
My best friend from high school is an Iraq War veteran. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he has a lot of psychological problems. He went and served in Afghanistan later on and got himself hit by a rocket. He survived. You know, he has a lot of problems.
That's what I kind of wanted to address.
Yeah,
and it's, they come back, if they don't come back damaged, they come back changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never for the better. Okay.
That's just a lot of crap. Yeah. I'm betting you good.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are not aware of just how badly messed up a lot of guys my age who went to Iraq are. It's very sad. I've known a lot of
and
them.
And Afghanistan, absolutely. Because they see things and do things that they can't get over.
Yeah, a lot of horrible things went on over there that made, you know, Vietnam look like a cakewalk.
Should never have been there in any of those places. Do we have a commercial coming up, Jim?
Yeah, we're at the top of the hour. We're just going to take a quick break. You guys can stay there and come back in after this. But we're on Speak Free Radio, folks. Obviously, if you're watching this, you know that. And we're going to thank our sponsor, Money Tree Publishing. Like we already talked about that in the beginning, mm-hmm. but people want to get some really good books there. They're the place to get the books dealing with the topics we deal with. And all the books are there. Dave's not going to carry that many books on his site, but the ones he's going to carry are going to be the real big ones, the good ones. Myth of German Villainy, 6 Million Factor Fiction. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff here, folks. Mm-hmm. Europa, the DVDs, all that. So we got plenty of information for you there. And if you use the term hoax, if you're ordering anything from that site, you get 10% off. So there you go. That's a little advertising. We want to thank Speak Free Radio for having us on. It's nice to be able to be on and be able to get some interesting points out here and there. And we appreciate that. So Dave and all the guys that mm-hmm. run this, we do appreciate what you're doing. So anyway, okay. Let's move on. Okay. We can move on with the comments. You can continue on talking if you want, if you have more points to make out. The other fellow there that's in there, again, I don't even know your name, but, if you want to talk about something, fine, or, Vinny, if you want to talk about something.
Yeah, I'll mention the fraudulent maritime legal system. I put up a video yesterday that was interrupted. I didn't know it was supposed to be like an 11-minute video, and it ended up being like 6 minutes because it got screwed up in the middle. Right? I think that even gives it more importance that they're trying to hide the information within. And once again, it's about the fraudulent maritime legal system, which we're all subject to at this moment. I believe it's all crumbling down. But I got over 6,000 views on this video. And it's not even a complete video, so it's a nice one. It's a nice one to check out if you guys want to see. But the real meat of the real fun one is his name is Jerry Rosberg. He's the VP at Columbia University. He was asked yesterday or not too long ago if Palestinians are human, and he refused to answer the question. He said he was. He's not going to be intimidated to answer that question, if you can believe that.
I will not be intimidated by you people.
Is that crazy? Right, right. And all this stuff that they're saying, right? Their fangs are bared. Everyone, okay, just understand what we're doing. Yeah. So thanks, guys. It's just crazy.
Okay. All right. We have Reese's back again. Hi, Reese. How you doing?
Hey, Reese. Jim.
How's Diane? Things going in New York?
Oh, things are going pretty good. Hang on. You hear me okay?
Perfectly. Yeah.
All right. I just had to take one earbud out because it sounded like I was swimming with earplugs in. So so I'm sure you go. Sure, you guys have been following. I heard your the guest that was on now, he was well-informed on the subject, what's going on with Iran. I've been following it on Al Jazeera.
Okay.
So it looks like maybe, just maybe, a little justice is going to be served a little late to the synagogue of Satan, the cauldron of Abaddon, for all the crimes that they've committed. But what I heard is this may only be the opening salvo. That was confirmed several times on Al Jazeera with members of Iranian military, that there's going to be missiles. The drones were able to be sent first because they traveled right over the air over like Iraq, for instance, and Lebanon. But there's going to be missiles that they're bringing in by ship, and there's supposed to be another salvo going.
Why would they divulge that ahead of time unless something else is going on?
That's
military intel.
Yeah, but the Iranians are like that. They like to get their enemies scared. They really like to play head games. Iranians are very sociopathic people. That's just
well. Remember this too. I want you to factor this in. You're right as far as if you were a military general, let's say that you wanted to play chess by the rules, you wouldn't say anything. You would do it, launch a surprise attack. But remember something: the outrages that were committed recently. The assassination of the greatest general probably alive, today was Soleimani. And they assassinated him. They bombed the embassy, the Iranian embassy in Syria. The Israelis did numerous operations in the last year or two assassinating Iranians, which are all war crimes. You know, so I think they're angry enough. Their people are saying, look, there's got to be some justice here. And they're probably at this point just letting their people know, look, if you think that those drones, that most of them, by the way, were shot out by Israeli missiles and Patriots and other things. They have one of the sling, the David sling, got most of them. But I think there's got to be more coming. And I think there was even a threat that was made. I heard this on Al Jazeera about an hour ago, that Iran had said, if the U.S. retaliates against Iran, if they enter the war, they said that there's going to be a major escalation. Something to that effect, or the weaponry use is going to be greatly increased. You know,
I don't doubt
whatever.
It. Yep.
So, but don't worry, we've got Joe Biden. Everything's in good hands. They're probably changing his diaper right now.
Well, that would
the
prevent
Patriots
an election.
Are in control. That's the yeah. Patriots are in control.
Oh yeah, well, that would prevent an election in November if there was this going on.
I mean, isn't it sad? I mean, our country is a sock puppet to this criminal regime.
That's exactly right. Exactly.
Sock. I can't imagine.
Did the dancing Israeli guy? You know, I really would like to know your name. I really hate going by these memes. You know what I'm saying?
Even just the first name.
Just the first name. I mean, if you want to talk, you want to speak.
You have not you, Reese. We got your name. The Jewy
one. Hold on, Reese. Okay. So, did you want to say something there, Mr. Dancing Israeli?
Sorry, I heard something in the background. You can just call me Christoph.
Okay, Christoph. Cool. Very good. Thank you.
I was hoping to say hi to someone. Hey, CB, what's going on, man?
Shalom, Jewy Wise.
Oh, you're very funny.
What's up, man? Okay. So you had someone in the U.S. Navy, huh?
Are you talking about my friend that I went to high school with that I mentioned? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I think so.
He was actually in the Army. So my mm-hmm. best friend from high school was in the U.S. Army Special Forces. He did two tours in Iraq, and then he did a tour in Afghanistan. It was in 2011. He got hit by a rocket in Afghanistan. Mm. So he was he had a lot to prove when we were kids. He grew up in a tough Cuban family. His dad was very tough on him, and he always had a lot to prove. And, you know, he went off and he did what he had to do. And I told him, you know, I said, the guy was like a brother to me. I said, you know, listen, you did your bit for king and country. And it's time to, you know, stay home and take care of your family. But I don't know if he was stop lost or what happened, but he ended up back in Afghanistan later on.
Sounds like stop loss. Some of them can't really assimilate back into civilian life, but and he never is going. It'd be like a prisoner. You're finally let out of prison, but you can't function free, so you have to go back into prison.
We grew up in the town right next door to where Brother Lucas Gage is from. Brother Lucas Gage is in Brick, New Jersey. I grew up, my best friend and I grew up in a town right next door called Toms River, New Jersey.
Mm.
And actually, where Lucas Gage lives is not too far. I think he lives probably maybe about a 5-minute drive from where my aunt's family is still in New Jersey.
Okay. Cool. All right.
Reese, you back in? Okay.
Yeah, my StreamYard link had dropped for a minute.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say that my second great uncle was in the SS and he met Adolf Hitler.
Good.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Did he get an autographed copy of Mein Kampf?
Yes.
I've got an original copy of Mein Kampf. Where is my Mein Kampf? Is it here?
It's in your library.
I get an original 1936 or 39 copy or something like that.
Yeah, it's in German.
The problem is it's in German. It's in German.
German script too, probably.
Yeah. So there you go.
I still got his Iron Cross and armband, though.
Good deal.
Oh, wow, that's good.
I always wanted to get one of his paintings. They're not that difficult to find. I think Jeff Rentz said he has a few of them.
You can if you want the original, I can't help you. But I got over 100 off of just a Google search, copied them and made a book out of it. So it's not that difficult. And then put pictures up in Jim's bedroom, about 40 or 50 of them or so. So it just. And
I think they were beautiful paintings. He was a very talented artist.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe he wasn't Rembrandt or somebody like that, but a very talented artist.
Different. It's more like Monet, and that's right. That is actually I don't know if that's an impressionist or not, but it's a beautiful soft colors. And then he was able to paint the buildings in various German cities. Oh my gosh.
I bet those Jews at the Vienna Fine Arts Academy really ate their yarmulkes. They're like, we should have let him in, you know?
Well, when he came back, I'm sure that they had a chance to discuss it.
I will bet that all his paintings, if they exist, they're all owned by Jews. I will guarantee
you. Right. Probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Out of spite, if anything.
Yeah. Well, who buys all the quote Nazi paraphernalia? You'll find out they're Jews. They're the ones that buy it all. All the originals. They're the ones that buy it. You know, you can't buy it, or if you sell it, they'd come after you. But the Jews can do it because, you know, they're special, the chosen people. That's right, you know.
Yeah,
well, they gave Harry Cooper a hard time a few years ago. It's funny, like you mentioned that, Jim. Like Harry Cooper had some stuff, I guess, that was given to him by
your submarine guy.
Yeah,
Harry Cooper and Shark Runners, and Harry. I don't know whether he had sold the stuff or whatever, but the SPLC attacked him for that. And I said to him one day about 5 years ago, last time I saw him, I said, Harry, even if you did, you know, sell, you know, stuff. So what? If they gave it to you, it's your property. You can do whatever the hell you want with it. But these Jews are so off the wall. They want to, on one hand, they want to accuse Harry that he's a horrible neo-Nazi because he's associated with German war veterans. But yet, on the other hand, he's also a worse guy because he sold the memorabilia they get. I mean, you just can't win with these fucking people.
No.
You can't win. You can't satisfy parasites, guys. You'll never satisfy parasites.
That's
just
right.
That.
Well, like Billy Joel said, you could never argue with a crazy mind. And Cicero, remember Cicero, what he said is that these people were mad. They are taken over by a spirit that one day he supposed that they might actually destroy the world, I believe he said, or contaminate the world. A man of, you know. And by the way, don't forget what Lloyd George said, those famous quote by Lloyd George, who was one of the towering intellectuals in London at the time. He said that Adolf Hitler was one of the three most powerful intellects that he had ever encountered. Not only was he highly intelligent and well-versed in history, but they said he was so cultured that it was a pleasure to be in his presence. And he charmed anyone. If you brought him in a room, within a very short time, people would be drawn to him. He was a very unique figure in political history.
Lloyd George was actually the British Prime Minister during World War I.
Yes, and he was also the London Daily newspaper. He was the editor, chief editor, for many years, and
the Telegraph?
Really, what's the other one?
The Daily Mirror, maybe.
The
Daily Mail.
But Lloyd George was another towering intellect. I mean, this is not like. These shills that we have nowadays. This is a man that really knew his history, you know, kind of like the founders. They could go through, you know, history dating back to the Romans until current time. And I think that's where a lot of the wisdom came from in trying to protect us from the enemy within in the founding documents. But we know that didn't last too long. By the way, can I just throw something in the mix?
Go ahead.
My specialty, I used to do a broadcast myself. I'm kind of like a Mark Dice. I've gone into the occult, secret societies, New World Order, Sabbateanism. And the reason I mention that is that what we're seeing right now, and I've been saying this now for about a year, may be the prelude to the Third World War of Albert Pike. You're probably familiar with that Pipes right. letter from 1871.
The letter to Mazzini you're talking about.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, this looks like the setup. And think about this. We have the prediction made by Henry Kissinger, which was just over 10 years ago. I think 12 years ago now.
Yeah, that Israel will disappear.
In 10 years. So what did they do? They put the they allow the crazy man to stay in, even though there are huge protests going on. I mean, you guys know about this in Israel for over a year to get Netanyahu out of office. That's why he orchestrated the October 7th, false flag. Yeah. And so what we have now is the setup for that third world war. They let the crazy man, you know, the so-called Hitler in the bunker, go and instigate a world war, escalating it, not doing what reason would dictate, you know, a measured response. But let's say, because they did say, Israel said just an hour or so ago through their spokesman that there will be a retaliation towards Iran. So that could trigger that third world war, you know. The stage
I don't
is
think
set.
The Russians and the Chinese can allow Iran to be flattened.
Right.
Especially the Chinese get tons of their oil from Iran, and to allow the United States and the other, you know, Western imperial powers to set up a base there in the middle of the whole thing. And then there's a lot of trade deals now. There's a railroad that's being built from Azerbaijan, which is basically an old Persian. Part of the Persian Empire that the Russians took over, and now it's a separate republic. And the railroad comes from down through the Caucasus, and then travels across Iran into India. And there's a lot of trade going on between the Russians and Iran and India through that. You know, that's part of the new Silk Road. They would have to be out of their mind to allow Iran to get taken down at this point. It wouldn't be in their interest.
Yeah, that's right.
And can we add to the mix? Very good point. How about this one? Russia is already encircled by NATO, and they're at this very moment trying to fast track Ukraine into NATO.
Yeah.
So no, I agree with there's a lot of people out there that say, you know, oh, Russia's not ready for an all out war with America. They don't want war.
But
the point is, if you know you're going to be attacked, and you know, what are you going to do? You're going to just wait until you're surrounded and then possibly have an all out assault. You know, you might say, look, at this point, we're all fed up with America, you know, under Zionist control, and it's intolerable what they're doing to us. They tried to destroy the ruble. They're working as a proxy army in Ukraine as well as with Israel. And I say, you know, I could see it. It's not far-fetched that there could be discussions, ongoing discussions that, look, you know, we don't want World War III, but we might as well do it now, you know, because it's inevitable. I see a scenario that could unfold. I'm not saying I'm sure. I think we may still be in the foothills of that World War III.
I think if I can say, Reese, that I think the sounder heads will prevail in the same way that Hitler did not attack England right away when he was being when numerous cities were being attacked by England. Civilian centers. Hitler kept his cool. He would not attack civilian centers, unlike what Churchill was doing. And then also I think Putin and the ruler in Iran and all these other countries that really know the damage, the cooler heads will prevail while this little yippy dog is running around biting at their ankles. At some point, they may have to take action, but I think there will be a kind of a delay and a tolerance of certain atrocities and then, of course, that'll embolden Israel like it did England against
Hitler. Diane, you're absolutely right. As far as logic goes and understanding, how international disputes would be handled, like, for instance, we know with Netanyahu, he was behind October 7th, and there's talk even now that he triggered the Iranian response by attacking the embassy because there was again protest riots in Israel. But all I say is this, there's always that black swan looming. You know, we could be talking like people were just before the major outbreak of World War II when Pearl Harbor was attacked.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, or 9/11. Like, we could be here talking, and all of a sudden, Monday or Tuesday, Israel attacks a U.S. naval vessel out in the Gulf or some other U.S. target.
They've done it before because they can. Yeah.
Sure.
Well, you talk about the Pearl Harbor Reefs, you know, you heard of the Le Serpent Rouge document, right? About how in the 20s in Paris, they found this document that said that we'll need a country to attack America to bring America into the next big war. And it actually said in the document, Japan would be perfect. So David Icke talks about it in his books. Mm-hmm. It's called Le Serpent Rouge, or the Red Snake. It was this document that was written in Paris in 1925 or something like
that. Yeah, I have not heard of that document. I've heard of a lot of things, but not that one. That's interesting. 1925.
Thereabouts.
We're talking 15 like that, years or so prior to the outbreak of the war.
Correct.
Okay, you know, what do we got here? Diane is bringing a video in. You want to – let's see. It's a short video.
Sure.
Let's see what it is.
I've come to one of the hottest tourism destinations in the world, Israel. Defying mathematics, this 74-year-old country has thousands of years of history. Book your stay on an illegal Israeli settlement. There are hundreds of stolen Palestinian homes to choose from. Pay a little extra, and you can go on one of our bombing Syria tours. They're on special offer right now. Sun, sea, sand, and suppression. Yes, don't worry. You will fly home guilt-free. Gaza is off limits for tourists. And who wants to visit an open-air prison anyway? No, visit the land of cultural appropriation, where you can find the best Israeli dishes, like hummus and tabbouleh. The land of tolerance and inclusivity, where everyone except a gay Palestinian is welcome. The Israeli nightlife is banging, especially during election season. Phosphorus bombs light up the sky over Gaza. You can hear the sound of snipers in the distance. Forget safari tours in Africa. Drive through the West Bank. You never know. You might catch a glimpse of a rare species. Journalists, for instance, have nearly been hunted to extinction in these parts. You know what? Why not just move to Israel? It's easy. Just find a Jew on your family tree, not a Palestinian, or marry a Jew. And more land will be freed up, especially for you. I mean, if you don't move there, someone else will. So what are you waiting for? Visit the last apartheid on earth.
irony was, definitely.
Well done.
I don't like hummus. Okay, just saying.
If I didn't laugh, I'd cry.
The funny thing about hummus, Diane, it's a Middle Eastern dish. It's basically, the Middle Eastern people. The Jews have even stolen that. They take the credit for that now, too, as if there wasn't enough for them to steal the land and do everything else. They actually take credit.
It's ours, Gordon. It's ours.
I used to work with this obnoxious Jew a couple of years ago. He didn't know I was
Iranian. That's redundant.
Right, exactly. So one day we were out having drinks. There was a group of coworkers, and he's like, "Get some hummus. It's delicious. We'll put the vegetables in it." I said to him, "I said I think hummus is okay." I said, "Yeah, I'm not that crazy about hummus." He says, "Well, you're not Jewish." And I just sat there and looked at him. Yeah, if you only knew what my background really was, you hook-nosed Jew bastard.
Oof. Yeah, you know, I had an experience with an Iranian. Back in the, say, middle 70s, I had this fellow, because I was a Jehovah's Witness. And he was a Jehovah's Witness from Iran. His name was Jamshid Tehrani. That was his name. I don't know why. I guess they incorporated
his name. Might as well have been like, "I'm Iranian," pretty much.
Yeah, no, I know. But anyway, so he must have had money, because he come over here. He had a beard, good looking, Iranian guy, typical looking Iranian guy, And I think he lived with me. I'm trying to remember exactly what the hell happened with him, but he was living with me. I gave him a room to stay in my apartment or whatever. But he had money, because he had a brand new, really fancy schmancy car.
Mercedes. They love Mercedes.
Well, no, he didn't have a Mercedes. He had a, not a GTO, Camaro-like. Like, Camaro GTO type of car, two-door, whatever. And, so everybody, he flaunted what he had. But he was a really nice guy. And I don't know whatever the hell happened to him. But, I look back at that saying, gee, here's someone that came into my life from Iran And, you know,
well, I'll tell you a funny story like that, Jim. When I was a kid, I barely remember this. I must have been about two or three. We went to California, Comafagafornia, as I call it. Of course, back then it wasn't as bad, but This is like very early 80s. So it was my dad and my mother and myself, and I was, like I said, maybe about two or three. So we go there. And we went to San Francisco, and this guy that was an Iranian friend of mine, my mother's, who she had helped him come over here and get his visa and everything. And he shows up. He had this typical, like, hot blonde California girlfriend. He shows up in the classic Ferrari 308 to pick up a married couple and a kid from the airport. So we ended up having to go rent our own car, like a station wagon, whatever, for our bags and all. Then a couple of years go by. It's like 1987 or something, and there's a knock at the door, and it's the asshole FBI with a picture of this guy. Now, he wasn't a terrorist or anything, but he was apparently an arms dealer. He was running arms to the Mujahideen. I guess he had gotten involved with the CIA or whatever. And they had come to the door asking my mother questions. My mother's like, I haven't seen this guy in 5 years. Like, I don't know who the hell he is. But yeah, there was a lot of that went on in those days.
Right. Christoph, I know you're going to be leaving the conversation. Did you want to finish off saying anything? Because I think where you live, it's late now, right? So you're probably going to bed. I'm not sure. I thought you lived in England or someplace out that way.
Yes, it's currently in the evening.
Okay. Did you want to say something?
I just want to say that this was a good show. I liked it. I enjoyed it. Got to speak to some of y'all, and it was wonderful.
Well,
I liked every single bit of it.
Good. Oh, good. Am I right that you don't live in the United States, or do you? I thought you didn't live here. You lived across the pond. Is that true or what?
I live in the U.S.
Oh, you live in the U.S. Okay, so that's okay. So we don't have to worry about it being too late for your bedtime.
Horribly late. Maybe late for him.
All right. Well, anyway, I'm glad we got you in. I appreciate your comments. So. All right, so anything else anybody want to talk about? Because we're going to go just to a last half hour of the show. We were going to talk about some of the videos I've been putting up, and we might be getting off on some other topics or whatever.
There is something I'd like to mention.
Sure.
Because I don't hear many interesting, investigative journalists anymore on NPR, but there was one in New York City on WBAI. The program is called Guns and Butter. And it was this week's program. You may want to listen to it because they dissect the whole operation of Netanyahu that led to October 7th with evidence that he actually paid for the militants to, you know, at least be involved with the operation. We know a lot of it was done by the IDF, but that Guns and Butter program was really well done. I learned a lot from it.
Ooh.
Okay,
Guns and Butter is a great program on BAI.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I think I might have listened to something on that at one time, but that's a good thing to think about.
Yeah, there's strange birds over there at WBAI. There's a lot of commies and real wackos. My aunt used to listen to that Ralph Schoenman. I don't know if he's still on there. And then there was that other wacko, Ward Churchill, is another nutball. So. They're a real strange bunch over there at WBAI. By the way, Reese, I heard what you were saying last week about chemtrails. I just wanted to mention that's something I've been trying to tell people about for over 20 years. But I don't know if you listen to Cliff High at all. Cliff High was saying that what he thinks it is that they're spraying the remnants of coal. So like from coal power plants and things like the coke and the stuff that's left over the coal slag. That's what he says that he thinks that the chemtrails are made of.
Well, I mean, we've had them analyzed. Several people have brought it to the lab. They've recovered dust from the roofs of their homes. We know that it's the metals
aluminum and barium.
Barium and strontium. Possibly biological agents in there as well. But I'll tell you what I mentioned last time, I think, and I sift through a lot of disinformation in the truth media. I've exposed a lot of bullshit over the years. But this one, I believe, is sound, the argument that they gave. They're trying to change the soil so that only Monsanto seeds are going to grow. And, of course, fill our bodies with heavy metals, which cause all kind of problems, especially when you incorporate it with fluoridated water. That's right. The one that really struck me, because then I said, wow, this is actually a two-stage attack on our minds. You know, like they say, to dumb us down. Everybody talks about putting fluoride in the water at the camps in World War II, but this could be on another level.
Yeah. Since you brought it up.
Hey, remember, go to the middle. Go to the middle of Dr. Strangelove, and you'll hear them talk about the fluoride. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right, they tell you a lot of stuff in Strangelove. Oh, go ahead, Jim.
I want to bring something up here. I listened to this has to do with the eclipse, okay? And so I listened to Max Egan today. Egan, whatever the hell his name is. It was a good show he did today, actually. But anyway, he was talking about the eclipse being fake. The eclipse was fake, and then he had a couple of people. Let me explain. I'm going to tell you what my experience. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, I'm sitting here, and where we live here, and I'm trying to watch the eclipse here to see what's going on, because every eclipse I knew of, it gets dark.
Doesn't matter if it's cloudy or not. It covers
gets completely dark for half hour or 10 minutes or whatever the hell it is. And then it gets light. Well, where I am in Texas here, there was nothing. There was nothing. It was just like the regular day. There was no problem. So,
no dark, no light.
Yeah. So Max Egan gets on, and he has this woman come on. She's kind of like a person into the stars and stuff like that. And she was saying that there was no I'm having a problem here. There was no alignment of the sun and the moon anywhere with the cosmology. She was there. It was nothing there, and it was just weird, because I'm saying, yeah, you're right. I didn't see no eclipse.
We've had other people report the same thing too.
And I had other people say the same thing too. Yeah. I didn't see anything. So I was just wondering if you guys, what happened with you guys?
I can tell you,
it's a weird one. Yeah, because
I watched it through a pair of high quality welding glasses that I have with a binocular, and it looked authentic to me. I seen about approximately 90% eclipse. I didn't see anything that stood out as odd about it.
But did it get dark?
Did it get dark where you were?
It didn't. It dimmed. It didn't get dark. It only dimmed. Yes, not being an expert on eclipse, I don't know how much of a, a full concealment of the sun would be required for you to actually experience the blackout.
Yeah, the moon wouldn't be able to do it.
Well, this woman that spoke, you got to listen to Max Egan's video. It's on my site if you want to look at it. But it was just interesting, because she was just saying that she studies all the stuff of the stars and movements of the stars, and
astronomy.
She was saying there was no. There was no alignment of the moon and the sun and the earth in anything. And so then he was explaining that day they sent up two satellites or something that very day. And, he's just saying that, isn't that coincidental that they did something with these satellites the day of the eclipse? And then I didn't see it. And some other people didn't see it.
No,
and then other people saw it. So I just think that they can do anything. They can make a fake eclipse. That's all I'm saying. And we wouldn't even know it, my opinion.
Oh, I could.
It sounds like they did, right? Because they didn't cover the launches at all. Why wouldn't they cover the launches of these three rockets that they sent up that day, right? I didn't see or hear anything about that at all. Only the fact that they're doing it.
Yeah. Well, there's always stuff going on behind the scene that they talk about Uncle Murray.
Well, I just thought that was interesting. No one knew anything about these two launches. There were two. They had weird names too, of the whatever they sent
out. Satellites,
huh?
The weird names for the satellites.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was just really weird names, and like a cultish, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, it's all cult stuff. That's why, the NASA and everything, it's all cult stuff. I don't know how true this is. A lot of people in the Flat Earth movement claim that NASA comes from, it's a Hebrew word, it's like nishah or something that means like, I forget what it means, like to deceive or something like that.
It's
I don't know.
Deception.
Well, right. It's Hebrew. It must
NASA
be true.
Is Hebrew for deception.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the thing though with NASA, you've got NASA is basically run by, you've got tons of Freemasons there, and then you've also got Nazis, quote unquote, the German National Socialists. And of course, they hate each other because the National Socialists wanted to get rid of the Freemasons because Freemasons are pieces of shit who work for the Jews. So that's, it was a weird collaboration there. But like all the fake moon landing astronauts, Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, yeah. They're all Freemasons. The guy who set up the whole thing, who chose the fake landing sites, his name was Kenny Kleinkenact. His brother, and I remember this in 2003 when I went to the Freemason Temple in Washington, D.C., the guy who was the sovereign grand commander of all American Freemasonry at the time, his name was C. Fred Kleinkenact. He was Kenny Kleinkenact's brother, and Kenny Kleinkenact was this asshole from NASA that chose all the supposed landing sites and the fake moon landing.
Well, I always maintain that you know, the moon landing shots are very primitive when there were other movies that had been made. I'm not sure if it was around that time, Saturn One or something. And then since then, you know, if you're going to have a good moon landing shot, get the experts, get Steven Spielberg, or get, you know, let's get a really good production that's really convincing. Because I know people think Star Trek and Star Wars is true, and that Jurassic Park is true. So get the experts on the program so you don't have any questions.
Well, Justin, I don't know if you know this, Diane. There's a James Bond movie. That was one reason why they killed Ian Fleming. He was telling too much truth in his movies and his stories. There's a James Bond movie came out in the early 70s. I think it was one of the last ones that Connery did. It was called Diamonds Are Forever. Uh-huh. Now, in that story, it's like 1971, 72 it came out. He goes out to this base outside of Las Vegas, Sean Connery, as James Bond does, and it's basically Area 51. They don't call it that, but it's basically Area 51, and he's trying to escape, and he stumbles onto this fake moon landing movie set, and he steals this moon car thing, and he crashes out of there with it. And then basically they're showing you the guy who's played by Jimmy Dean, who's been captured by Spectre. Spectre is basically the Illuminati that the Jews have taken over. The guy who's been captured, it's played by Jimmy Dean, that's basically Howard Hughes, okay? And then Howard Hughes had this thing was called the Gemstone File. Basically, the Jews went after Howard Hughes. They took over his whole organization. They did the same thing. So it had to do with, like, lasers and stuff. And then that was the same thing. Basically, they took over Howard Hughes' empire. And this guy, I think he's called Willard White is his name, and he's played by Jimmy Dean. They're hiding him, and the Spectre guys are living in his penthouse atop the casino that he owns in Vegas. So it's basically Howard Hughes is what they're showing you. And that was all Howard Hughes in the Gemstone File. That was all kinds of shit that they were into. And then they did the same thing. Aristotle Onassis was basically a KGB agent. And this was all the stuff that was going to ties in with the Kennedys and with Israel and all that.
What's interesting is that when Reese was talking about or bringing up the chemtrails things, and then it basically loads the ground so that only certain seeds can grow. What's interesting is the last Jurassic Park movie, that was the theme of it. They created a super locust, and the super locust would only descend upon, if you want to call it, it'd be like Monsanto. Those were protected from the locusts. But the ones that were not the Monsanto ones were the locusts would devour. And absolutely, now you're talking about a starvation issue for the planet because all the breadbasket fields were taken up. Unless you had the Monsanto seed, and if you had that seed, then you had a flourishing crop. If you didn't, the locusts would get it. And I thought, you know, that's, you know, science fiction. Steven Spielberg's getting a little too close to the truth on this. You better watch it.
Well, that's what they tell you what they're going to do in these movies.
Okay, now that's it. I don't like this term. Chutzpah, is that what they say?
Right,
the
mouth right.
They think they're so immune to prosecution or criticism, they can tell you what they're going to do in advance. That's what happened to our elections in 2020. They didn't care. They told us what were going to happen.
Yeah.
They believe – so when you study, like Reese might know this from studying the occult. These people, they're deeply into the occult. In the occult, there's this thing called – cosmic karmic law, which basically says that if I tell you I'm going to do something bad to you and you don't do anything to prevent it, when I do it, then the karma is on you and my karma's lifted. This is, they actually believe this.
Wow.
This is, so if I tell you I'm going to come break into your house at 2 o'clock in the morning and murder you and you don't do anything to stop it, the bad karma's on you. It's not
on me. It's your fault.
It's on you, boy. Yeah.
Right. That's, of course, one explanation. The other one is, if you believe in the reality of a spiritual dimension, as I do, that they are under the rules of engagement that God lays out, just like it was in the Old Testament. It's an inversion of the Old Testament prophets. Everything that you find in Sabbatean Talmudic Judaism is an inversion. So in the Old Testament, the prophets had to tell the people before judgment came or there was a chastisement what God was going to do. So the Sabbateans are under that same rule of engagement that they have to tell us first what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying. Okay, well then that's, there you go.
Well, also, would you agree that most people are not God-fearing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, most people are what they would call practical atheists. I mean, even those going to churches nowadays,
I agree.
Right.
They have no real convictions.
Correct.
You're right. You're right.
They like to feel good. It's a form of narcissism. You know, Jesus is just waiting to welcome me into heaven.
Right.
Even though that there is tens of thousands of innocent women and children in Gaza getting obliterated, my priest won't mention it for fear of the Jews. And yet, I'm a good person because I'm going to put my Israeli flag out now that Israel got bombed by that evil nation of Iran, headed by, you know, the new Hitler.
They replaced their Ukraine flag or their with their LGBT flag with the trans flag, and now it's getting replaced with the Israeli flag.
Oh, boy. Just crazy.
Not much of a lateral move. but anyway, did you want to show a video, Jim?
Well, no, I was just going to finish off because we only got about 15 minutes.
Uh-huh. You're right.
Yeah. So I wanted to just finish off with some of the videos. If Diana wanted to go to my site. And I've been showing some interesting videos I've been putting up.
Not that one. Not the big ones.
Okay, so let's see. Do I have any short ones there?
Yeah, she's got to scroll down. Not that one.
Well, that short one there was kind of gross. That had to do
with gross.
About this is all cockroaches in some person's house or something. I don't know.
And they're just spraying them so the cockroaches are leaving.
I don't know how people could live it like that, but anyway, they did. Okay, moving down. Let's see what else.
This
is my video about Max Egan. Again, that was a very interesting walk and talk that he had today because he was talking about, you know, some of those things that I was talking about there. So anyway, moving down.
Truth is truth. No, that's too long.
Yeah.
Michael Jones, no.
I guess I don't have any shows, Ms.
Yeah, you do. You do. But how dare you?
That little girl was talking about some interesting stuff. You know, I thought that was pretty smart of her.
In school, I think. Was it in school?
Yeah. Let's see. What else do I got? I don't know. Maybe that's
There's some more. Not that. FBI visit. That didn't make any sense to me because we had no idea what they were doing there.
Well, they were visiting the guy.
I know, but we don't know why.
Well, he didn't want to engage him. You know,
didn't want to talk to them at all. Okay, that wasn't very clear.
Well, the reason why I put the video up, folks, is because, how do you deal with the FBI or law enforcement when they come to your door? Should you engage them? Should you talk to them? And pretty much you really shouldn't talk to them.
Because?
I mean, I suppose if you want to ask them why they're there, you could find out. But I really wouldn't engage them, you know, in any conversation.
Because
everything they say and do and will be used against you.
That's it.
In a court of law. And I noticed in this video that the guy, he didn't want to talk. But I noticed the guy asked him, he says, oh, so you don't want to talk to us. And then he wrote, I'm having a problem. He wrote down, you could tell he's probably writing down, person was a belligerent or person didn't want to talk or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Good. Just so you don't come back. Okay.
Well, I'm just saying, you know.
Okay.
You gotta be careful talking to people that come to your door. All right. Yeah. Because they're not there to help you. They're here. Right. Everything you say, they're going to use against you. It doesn't matter what you say to them. They will use it against you. So
That's right.
You got to be very careful. Okay.
Keep going.
I put this video up about Stonehenge. I don't know if you guys have ever looked in the Stonehenge. I think Stonehenge is a bunch of baloney. But anyway.
I just saw that. Yeah. Bro, what's that? They made it in 1950. In 1950, they created Stonehenge. How can people in
this? There's something not right about Stonehenge, okay? And, you know, a lot of these people, they said, well, in 1950, they were just repairing it, doing repair work on it. Yet I'm saying this doesn't look like repair work. They're moving these big, huge stones.
Looks like creation.
Putting them in the position. To me, it looks like they created it.
Yeah.
They created this thing in Stonehenge to become what they wanted to become today. You know, all this mystical stuff. You know what I mean? The stones in the Georgia stones? Is that what it's called?
Well, the Georgia Guidestones. That's a little bit different. So actually what you're saying, David Icke talks about that, like with places like Stonehenge and stuff, they put them on there. He says they call it suppressing the grid. So it actually, like, there's these things, I don't know if you ever heard of, called ley lines. They're like these psychic lines.
I've heard
lines.
Of that.
Right. They have to do with energy and earth energy and things. And this is, I'm not saying this to push occultism or anything like this. It's, you know, scientists have studied these things. And there's actually, like, basically these different grids that crisscross the earth and different points and things. So if anything, they're putting these like Stonehenge or these different structures there to suppress the grid, because these are like different points where God and the universe basically communicate with the earth and communicate with people. And this is probably one of the reasons why we have a lot of UFOs.
That's
going to
stop him, huh?
Well, no, I'm not saying it's going to stop him, but this is, you know, these people that we're dealing with are truly like beyond evil. So, you know,
understand.
Is all this stuff locked up in the Vatican? Yeah, you know, all the secrets.
Yeah, of course. Well, like you were talking, you mentioned the cloud busters, like with Wilhelm Reich and stuff. I mean, Reich was himself a cultural Marxist and all, but I remember with the cloud busters years ago, but those are things that they're tough to get your hands on. I have some of the Orgon stuff, but Orgon is very powerful stuff, and they don't want people to know these things.
Someone just created recreated cloud busters. That's why I mentioned it. Yeah, thank you.
Well, there are obscure sites you can find online. I remember there used to be one, I think it was called educateyourself.org. They used to be able to buy the they would have like the resin in the bucket with the pipes in it that you could get the cloud busters from. It was very expensive. They were like hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars in some cases. But yeah, this stuff's out there.
Yeah, I've never heard of that, all that stuff.
Well, it's interesting.
There's a lot of things going on, Jim.
Yeah, apparently.
I don't get to see all this stuff here. Okay, let me see what else I got to finish up with. We only got a few minutes here.
Yeah, you've got some ones below these big ones.
I do?
Yeah, there are some more videos. Let's see. Okay, that one's kind of big. You could do this one. Auschwitz Liberation was staged later by the Soviets.
Oh, okay. Well, we could do that. That's a quickie. Yeah. Let's play that one. It's only a minute and something.
Yep. Okay, it's muted. There you go.
Initially, we did not film the misery inside the barracks. After evacuating the camp on January 19th, the SS cut off the electricity. Because initially our camera crews had no lights, we could not shoot indoors. The prisoners had to be transported as quickly as possible because they were starving to death and almost frozen. Only some time later, after the snow had melted, was Vorontsov able to ask some women to re-enter the barracks in order to show the conditions in which they had lived. These women, Poles, had only been in Auschwitz since September 1944, when they were brought here after the Warsaw Uprising. They were still strong enough to fulfill this request. Helena Yabłońska, Stanisława Krzeczkowska, and Olympia Pruszynowska told how each of the barracks, which had originally been designed as horse stables for the Wehrmacht, housed nearly 1,000 people, 6 to a bunk. There was no indoor plumbing. Sanitary conditions were indescribable, with many prisoners suffering from diarrhea, dysentery, typhus, and other diseases, and too weak to get up.
This is before the Soviets sent them back to the Soviet Union.
In spite of the fact that Soviet cameraman Alexander Vorontsov admitted in 1985 that this scene was staged after the snow had melted, the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum still in 2020 is representing this as a scene from, quote, the newly liberated Auschwitz concentration camp, close quote.
Okay, so that, see, what's interesting about this is, and I've done a lot of stuff on this, the Soviets didn't get into Auschwitz until January, around 20th or thereabouts, of 1945. And at that time, there was probably about two feet of snow on the ground. But all the pictures you see of the liberation, there's no snow on the ground. Okay, so there's your problem. The problem is they staged the liberation later. So say probably April, May, when all the snow was melted, then they brought people back in because people were still there in the camps. And they brought back in this, you know, staged this and to make it look like, you know, this is what it looked like. But I don't know if you noticed the people in the beds. How many people were in those beds?
They stuffed as many as they could.
Well, there was, you know, some people give their testimony saying there was six, eight people in a bed. There was only one bed. I mean, you had your own bed. Okay. It's not, you can't put five people in a bed. Okay. It just wouldn't work. You know,
The gulag you do, but the point is
when they staged it later, they obviously put three people in a bed that only held one person. You know, they didn't just leave one person in the bed showing, this is my bed. They had to put three people to show that it was overcrowded, all these problems.
All that stuff that they were saying about the facilities was wrong.
The whole thing with the Holocaust, right down to the end, it was staged. I mean, everything was just, you know, all put there. So everybody, and even at the end, I've done videos on it. I've showed people that. They were showing the gates being open and all the people were being let free. Well, that was all staged too. When it was warmer and when there's no snow on the ground, they made it look like this is the way it was. Well, it wasn't. That's not the way it was.
Not to mention that they said in the beginning of this that they didn't have enough light for their cameras. And you have said that they didn't have cameras. That they had to send back to Moscow.
The Soviets didn't have cameras when they went into the camp so they had to go back after. Now, everybody stages things, and one of the, because Diane and I talked about this in a walk and talk, and the best staged thing I ever saw was Iwo Jima. Okay, when they were raising the flag on Iwo Jima. If you go look at that flag. So, you know, thing there, raising that flag. That was probably done about 10 times.
they made a movie about that. There was a movie came out about maybe 15, 20 years ago. It was called Flags of Our Fathers, where they showed that whole thing was all a bunch of bullshit.
But it's again, you have to understand it's all propaganda. Everything is, you know, done to make something look good. And, you know, that's how it is. I mean, you see stuff that you think happened a certain way. And it was all staged, completely staged. And talking about Gaza, which I don't like to even talk about because I could care less about Gaza. I watched a video today someone sent me, which was interesting. It showed a picture. It wasn't Gaza. I think it was Syria. And it showed a guy going into a car. He put a bomb in the car and then he drove off and the car blew up. And then the next scene, you get all these men coming in cars and trucks or whatever, probably about 10 of them, and they all got out of the cars and trucks, and they all laid around where the car blew up. Now, remember, they had nothing to do with the scene. They came in later to make it look like the car blew up with them there. All staged. And this is the stuff we're getting now from Gaza, and we're getting this stuff from all over. I don't trust anything that comes from the Middle East that shows anything happening in the Middle East. I don't trust any of it, just to let you know, because every single thing of it, I believe they can stage it or they can take video especially how they can manipulate video today to make something look like it happened in a certain place where it didn't happen there at all, but it makes it look like it happened, like a building blowing up or people get blown up or whatever. It doesn't matter. It could have happened somewhere.
It's all a big show.
Yeah.
It's all a big show, Jim.
Yes.
It's all a big show.
That's right.
Isn't Satan the greatest trickster?
Yep.
Yeah. Right. And this is why I don't really get into the Gaza stuff, because I don't trust the Palestinians and I don't trust the Jews and I don't trust anything that they're showing me from what's going on over there, because I think they're both burning the candles from both ends over there. So that's just my thoughts on that. Some people, you know, might not agree with that, but
I don't
trust nobody.
I think I
have to take exception with Jim.
Okay.
I think we can trust them.
Okay.
We could trust them to always lie.
Lie to us, yeah.
Through their teeth. That we could trust about
that's
them.
That's true. You can bet
on it. I always tell people when I get into a conversation about like what's happening with that, I don't personally really care about the Palestinians. I think it's wrong what's happening to them.
Yeah.
And I think we shouldn't be paying for it. And they should have their country back. And they can live in their country. And we live in our country. And these asshole Jews can go fuck themselves. But basically, you know, the bottom line is, you know, our concern should be the welfare of the United States and Europe and the Western world. And, you know, there's this Iranian academic that he's on RT all the time. He's a professor. And he grew up partly in the United States. He has almost an American accent and his English is perfect. His name's Mohammed Mirandi. And he's always on RT. And he says, look, the Americans are stupid. They're letting Israel take them down with them. Mm-hmm. You know, I always say you should go at this from a logical standpoint. The United States doesn't get anything positive out of its support for Israel.
Right.
You get a bill, you get hated, you get terrorism, there's nothing. And then even if, let's say there was a war in the Middle East and, you know, or let's say the United States was attacked for real. Israel wouldn't do a goddamn thing to help the United States.
Oh, that's for sure.
So, I mean, there's no benefit to the United States supporting Israel whatsoever. It's nothing but a drag on America at best.
That's right. Okay, well, look, we're going to be finishing up with a video here, but I just want to mention Ryan Masano's show is after our show here on Speak Free Radio. So if you want to listen to a very intelligent fellow that has a good knowledge of things, that would be good. And I want to thank all you guys that came in tonight. You really make it really good for us.
Yeah, appreciate it.
To keep it going. And we appreciate that. So here's a video. We're going to close it. I don't know what's going on with the video, but
beware the Ides of April 19th. It's a week away.
Okay. What's going on?
Back on all the crap.
Another eclipse?
No, that's where everything happens. Virginia Tech, Waco, Columbine,
Boston. May 1st also is another day that did.
Of course.
Lack of education broke the compass on. You can read the Bible and be warned. Chromosome, you can become a tranny, but Grandpa Jenna won't become a granny. Just cause the world says it's okay to be gay, oh yeah. Procedures and pills won't hide ya. X and Y are double X inside ya. Cause God won't take your chromosome away. If you took all the girls who knew they started out as dudes, the mutilated frames for all to see, you'd have a bunch of dudes with vain imaginations.
That's Romans 1, y'all. Verse 21.
Hating God for what they really be. Chromosome. You see, the God who made ya has given you his word and that forbade ya from carving around and using Mary Kay. Oh, yeah. Procedures and pills won't hide ya. X and Y are double X inside ya. Cause God won't take your chromosome away. God. chromosomal